everyone. Welcome back to Who's There. I'm your host, Allison. If you're new here, thank you for joining us. This is a podcast where I talk to a new horror fan every week because I hope to destigmatize what it means to be a horror movie fan. Because most of us are just regular people who like the adrenaline rush of being scared for some reason, and here we delve into those reasons. I'm so excited because I have an extra juicy episode for you guys this week with filmmaker and actor Jen Ponton. We connected on Twitter, and I was so excited to talk to her about the horror movie that she filmed specifically to be put as multiple chapters on TikTok called The Caretaker. The story is so interesting, and you will have to check it out on TikTok, and it's also super inspiring if you're a newer filmmaker. We talked about how she became a horror fan due to bad parenting, as so many of us did, why she binged horror movies every day during the pandemic, and what her favorite subgenres of horror are. One last thing before we get into this episode, if you love the show and haven't left us a review on iTunes yet, I'd be so grateful if you could take a second to rate and review it on the Apple Podcasts and subscribe to our feed wherever you listen to us. Thank you to everyone who's already left us a review. It's so appreciated, as it really helps people to find us. I think I've rambled enough, so let's get into this episode with Jen Ponton. Hey, Jen, how are you?
I am so good. How are you, Allison?
I am good. I'm so excited to talk to you. Thank you for being here. Do you want to start by telling everyone a little bit about yourself?
What's up, horror fans? I'm Jen Ponton. I'm mostly among you. I am a lifelong horror junkie, but you might know me in pop culture, usually as a comedic actor and horror lover and new horror filmmaker. So that's sort of the gist of me.
Awesome. So first things first, what's your favorite scary movie?
The miniseries of It.
How come?
It speaks to every single like touchstone and need and fear that I have ever had, period. And like my laundry list of beloved scary movies is vast and broad and deep, but like at the end of the day, I could watch every single one of those actors just serve that story perfectly every time. Obviously, Tim Curry is the creme de la creme, but like all the adults and many of the kids really just do an amazing job. And I do very much like Andy Muschietti's remake of recent years. Like, I think those are stellar and even hard to say even better cast, but extremely well cast. But that miniseries, it scratches every itch I have, and it made up my nightmares for the entirety of my life. So I have to give it, you know, its accolades.
Awesome. I've actually never watched it, so
That's
a blind spot for me. I don't know where you can stream it. Can you stream it anywhere?
Often they will have it, they'll have it streaming. Sometimes it's like on YouTube for free.
Okay.
I would hunt it down. It is legendary. And I'll also say, like, there are people who give it flack, and it's usually, but you know, 90% of it is absolutely incredible. And then like the last 10%, they just like, they lost time, they lost money, and they hurried up the ending. Mm-hmm. And it sort of got a little phoned in, but like, it's an incredible project.
That's awesome. I will have to track it down finally. But I do love Andy Muschietti's part one and part two.
So good.
Yeah.
What's your favorite scary movie?
My favorite is The Ring from 2002, the American remake.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a very intense PG-13 movie. So.
So intense. Really, every time I think I should rewatch it, I'm incorrect. Like, because it just sticks with you.
Yeah. Especially if it's like a rainy day. So.
Oh my God. Yes.
I might actually go watch The Ring 2 after this, because I saw it in theaters. I have the ticket stub. I don't remember anything about it. I'm like, I saw this in theaters.
It's creepy. Yeah. It's creepy. Yeah. It's crazy. The first time I saw The Ring, I had a really crappy laptop, and it was like 2002 internet, for whatever that's worth. And I was watching it like BitTorrent, right? And so it lost a lot of the horror in translation because it was such a bad copy. And so I was mostly like left scratching my head and like, I don't really understand what's so scary about this. And then I watched it like either in the theaters or on DVD. And I was like, oh shit, I should not watch this frequently.
Yeah, there are a couple of like lines of dialogue that just, they come off so cheesy when you watch it in a theater nowadays, but like it's still really intense. And when she comes out of the TV, everyone loses their mind.
It's so. Still so good.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how did you first fall in love with the horror genre?
Through bad parenting. I was 5 and my dad had a Child's Play on. My dad loved horror, usually schlocky horror, but like they had some good ones. Like Poltergeist is another beloved favorite of mine. And I was like 5 years old and he had a VHS rental of Child's Play and he was watching it alone. And I went into the living room and I was like, what are you watching, Dad? And he's like, oh, it's a movie about a doll. Come sit down and watch it. And that, I mean, the effect that had on me, I spent every night after I was tucked into bed, like staring up at my row of stuffed animals and just waiting for something terrible to happen. And that didn't stop until I like went to college.
Oh, that's funny. That's great. Dude, I've never seen any of the Chucky movies. Have you watched all of them since then?
No, I don't think I might have seen like the first one with Jennifer Tilly in it.
Okay.
And then I was like, this is sort of like trying to skew funnier and sexier than it is scary. And like, I really liked it when it was scary. So I saw maybe 1, 2, and 3 for sure. And then as soon as it became like Bride of Chucky and then beyond, even though I've heard really good things about like the recent series that came out and like the last couple of, you know, like Spawn or Seed or whatever of Chucky.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten into them yet, at least. But I did watch the first few Child's Play movies.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another blind spot for me. I did see the 2019 remake, which was not very good.
Oh, I watched that too. I did not like that either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Megan was a much better version of like the computer doll.
So, I haven't watched Megan yet. I'm so excited.
It's a lot of fun. It's not really so scary, but it's just like you'll be laughing the whole time.
Amazing. I cannot wait to watch that one.
So why do you think that people who seem perfectly sane love the horror genre?
Because I think horror is how we express, and like, I think horror fans are also not just sane, but like some of the most empathetic and compassionate people on earth, and usually have like a deep understanding of the human condition. And I think it's because horror is a great way for us to examine social fears and social eras. And like, you know, if you were to go through like a sociological lens, like the sort of problems that we face with monsters in the cinema is exactly what we're dealing with like right-wing white supremacists or Nazis or genocide or, you know, the total eradication of the middle class and the siloing of wealth. Like, it's all related. And so since that is the mindset that we put ourselves into a lot so that we're thinking about it, I think maybe that creates a more compassionate and caring response rather than like only watching comedies or only watching like fantastic erasures of reality. I don't think we're really erasing reality in horror. I think we're rebottling it.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, I agree. I agree with you there. So on a similar note, what scares you in horror movies and in real life today?
Oh my God. Ari Aster scares the shit out of me. I don't know what's going to happen with the new one, the Joaquin Phoenix. Yeah, I have no idea what's going to happen with that one. I watched Hereditary and I was left so unsettled.
Yeah.
And like I felt it too a bit with Midsommar, although more so in the beginning when like you see the scene where like she has set her family, like it it's very unsettling. And there's something about the cinematography. There's something about the way that like shots are created and crafted. Like it, it really creates a ton of like dread and deep fear in me. So that's someone who's really killing it. I also like, I love a deep and crawling and abiding dread. I absolutely love it. I respect it so much more than a jump scare, you know?
Yeah. What is a movie that I watched recently that just had... Well, I had Paige Wesley, who's one of the hosts of The Horror Virgin, on last year, and we talked about movies that create dread, and she's a big fan of those, too. I can't remember what are some other dread-filled movies, but, like... Yeah, they're definitely out there. Ari Aster does it really well. I'm hoping that Beau is Afraid is going to be a lot scarier than the trailer leads on.
Right.
And like half an hour before we got on to chat, my friend sent me a screenshot in New York City on Monday night in my neighborhood. They're doing like a screening of it with a Q&A with him after. It's sold out already, but I'm still going to go and try to get in and try to just maneuver my way in there. So
yes, oh my god, I would be curious. I don't think I've ever watched the trailers for Midsommar or Hereditary. I'm wondering if he like undersold those too, so when you go in you're like, what the fuck? Because he just has a really fabulous sensibility. Found footage also really gets me, always. Every time.
I love it.
Every time. It's like it's easy to do, but also, I mean, thank God it's easy to do because we can't raise the budgets that are required for it to be harder, but it's so effective.
Yes.
Like in Rec. Mm-hmm. Rec absolutely ruins me. And I mean, there's pretty much anything out there that's found footage is just terrifying.
Yeah, one of my top three favorite is Cloverfield.
So, yes!
Yeah.
I love Cloverfield.
So good.
So good. Did you end up watching the Cloverfield the experiment? Whatever
Paradox?
The Netflix? Yes.
I did. It was like a little weird. It was more like sci-fi than horror. And
I didn't watch it.
Yeah. I think you're fine. You don't need it.
I love the original so much. It's so good.
Yeah, it's really... Seeing it on a big screen, though, I saw it again in the theater last year, and it's, like, it's intense to watch it. It's, like, very, very shaky cam. So, and mm-hmm. Because I usually only watch it on, like, my TV back there, and I'm like, it's not that bad. But then, like, when it's, like, a screen, yeah, it's intense. So what would you say are your favorite subgenres in horror?
Favorite subgenre? I love a cult film. Mm. I love a cult film, especially when cult goes wrong.
Mm.
Yeah.
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 Like what are some of your favorites?
Martha Marcy May Marlene is so fucked up.
I didn't even know that was a horror film. I thought that was like just a drama.
I would call it a thriller.
Okay.
If I had to get really specific, I would call it a thriller. And it's so fucking good. Like, you do think it's just going to be a drama. And then it turns out, like, the manipulation and the trauma are, like, way more expansive than you thought was happening. And there's another one. Oh, like, Ty West did... not Sanctuary. He did Sacrament.
Yes. Yes, I did. I like
loved
that one.
That.
Ty West is not a director that I really like a lot of his stuff. I think he's very good at what he does, but like, I did like The Sacrament.
I really liked Sacrament. I thought that was very well done. And then there was another one called something Eden. Eden. I'm not gonna get it.
Lake.
Maybe it. I think it has Jessica Alba in it, and it's about this documentary crew who goes to the site of a long since dead death cult, and they are picking up pieces of like, you know, footage, tapes, journals, scribblings, and they're putting it all together, and then it has like a supernatural bent. So I love a cult film. Rosemary's Baby, love a cult. Oh, The Veil. I was entirely off. The Veil is from 2016.
Oh, okay.
I really liked it. I've never even heard of it. Right? It was like on Netflix and, you know, panned, doesn't have a lot of stars, but I was like, what the fuck? And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was unique and interesting and taut and scary.
Yeah.
So I do love a cult movie. I love a cult movie, and I really enjoy like a well-done possession. Like, they scare the shit out of me. But like The Last Exorcism.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Was so good. Or I've only seen Emily Rose once, but I remember thinking that that was absolutely terrifying.
Yeah.
You know, the Conjuring films, like, fuck off with those. I mean, I can't even handle them. Possession films are always super scary. Paranormal Activity is another one, like with The Ring. Like, I just don't think I can watch it again.
Oh, I love watching them. And it's like supernatural, like Where's Waldo? Because you're looking for things like in the background. You're like, what's gonna move? When? So
Yep. Easter eggs everywhere.
Yes. I love it. Do you have any favorite horror directors?
I haven't seen everything of Ty West's, but I love House of the Devil, another cult movie.
Yes.
I love House of the Devil. I think it's so well done and like just hits its stride in every way. It's impossible to not like Ari Aster. I haven't watched Skinamarink yet. And to be entirely honest, I don't know if I can bring myself to.
How come?
Because all of the feedback of it, besides people who like don't care about horror and they're like, I don't even get it. It's just a wall. Like, everyone who gives a shit about horror is like, I'm never not going to think about this movie for the rest of my life. And I've done that so many times, but given what it's said to do so effortlessly, which is like put you in a primal place of like child middle of the night fear, like been there, done that my entire life. I don't know if I can willingly go through it, especially when I'm an adult and I can't like crawl into my parents' room anymore. Like, now I just got to sit there and know that it is that terrifying. So I'm not sure I can ever watch Skinamarink, but I feel confident that I would loathe it in terms of just like, yeah, fearing it with everything inside of me. I presume you watched it. I know you did.
I did. They showed it for a weekend in the city at 42nd Street. So I went to go see it then. It was a very interesting experience to see it in theaters. It was a packed theater, and like anytime there was like a jump scare or like a loud sound, like everyone jumped. But it was also so quiet the entire time because we were all just sitting there. We're like, what's gonna happen? What's gonna happen? So I found it more unsettling than scary. Like that is just, I think it's just constant dread. Like we were talking about, not as intense as Hereditary, but it's just like you're just waiting for something to happen.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Terrifying. I really don't know. I'm not sure I can bring myself to do it, but I think that would easily make it right up there with like one of the scariest, one of the most upsetting things I had ever seen.
Well, save it for October and then watch it at night.
Yes. And the oh gosh, his name is escaping me right now, but like the guy who did Brand New Cherry Flavor and Channel One, or Channel Zero rather, and Nick Antosca.
Oh, I have not heard of him. I did not watch Brand New Cherry Flavor.
Brand New Cherry Flavor is great.
Is it vampires?
No.
No?
It's okay. More, it's witchcraft.
Oh, okay.
It's witchcraft. Nick Antosca, and he also did the Jessica Biel show about Candy, what's her face, right? The woman in Texas who like murders. Yeah, he did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he did that. He's excellent. And I first got to know his work when Shudder was doing Channel Zero, which is this fabulous horror anthology series about well, each season is its own arc, and they're all really brilliantly done. Each one is like loosely based on a creepypasta.
Oh, okay.
And so like season one is about this like public access kids show that some people remember but like has been lost to the winds of time, and like people remember really scary things happening on it, and were they real, were they not. Season two is absolutely beautiful, and it's about this like haunted house experience where you sort of go into a different dimension of your life. And that one I've watched over and over, and it's so brilliant and it's so beautiful, and it's really a study on grief, and it's done so, I mean, just like gut punchingly well. And season three is based on like a staircase to nowhere in the middle of a park.
Oh, I've heard another podcast talk about the mythos behind those when people see them. Oh, that's really interesting. So this is
They're
Into the Dark.
So good. This is Channel Zero.
Oh, Channel Zero. Okay.
It's so good. It's so good. There were four seasons, and season two is my absolute favorite, but like they're all really effective. And I believe he directs all of them, and then went on to do Candy on Hulu and to do Brand New Cherry Flavor, which is really like, it's a very visceral visual show. And like Catherine Keener plays the bad guy.
Oh, wow.
She's so good.
Yeah.
It's really lush. It's very visually disgusting and amazing. Like it gets really gory and gross, but it's really incredible.
Awesome. I'll have to check it out. He also so wrote the movies The Forest and Antlers, both of which I like.
Oh, yeah. I did not watch either of them yet.
Yeah. The Forest is about, there's a forest that people go into in, I believe, Japan to commit suicide, and this girl's sister supposedly went into the forest and never came out, and she's like, my sister would never commit suicide, so she goes in and then spooky stuff happens.
Right. So. It's supposed to be incredibly haunted, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So someone new to watch out for. Awesome.
Yes.
So your new film, you said you were a filmmaker. Your film Caretaker premiered on March 1st. Can you tell me a little bit about it?
So Caretaker is specifically a social media experience horror film. I wanted to make something specifically for TikTok that rolled out in a narrative format, because it's so, like, even for really talented creators on TikTok, it's hard to watch just like one segment of a something. And I know they've like blown out the walls on length of time, but let's say, just for the sake of argument, that it's like maybe 3 minutes and it just stands alone and that's it. And then it's just like a dandelion puff in the great world of TikTok. So my creative partner, Jody, and I, we wanted to create a short film, basically, that was interactive. And Caretaker takes place on two different TikTok accounts. Caretaker Film, which is like the
you know, the fourth wall, that's Jodi's camera as the cinematographer. And that's the narrative storytelling. But because the film is about an influencer, you also have the handle Kate May Caretaker, which is my character Roz. That's her personal TikTok. And that's where she does all of her influencing. And so, like, you can watch the movie unfold along with these, like, innocuous, like, dance posts, you know?
Oh my God, that's so interesting. How did you come up with the idea for that?
We really wanted to utilize social media, especially because, you know, like, as filmmakers who've been in it for the long haul, you know, I think it was very popular for a really long time until basically social media video became king. It was super popular to tell creators, like, okay, well, if you want to make something, you have to crowdfund and shake down all your friends and family and send out this many emails and, like, so on and so forth. And then you'd do that and you'd crew up and you'd make your film and maybe you'd sell it or maybe you'd get it distribution. But, like, it's a whole endeavor. And that was the only way that you could be taken seriously as a filmmaker for, like, a long time, for, you know, phase one of the internet, let's say. And now that we're in phase two of the internet, now we have, like, everybody has a camera, and all of these people, all these billions of people who are on the internet, like, just have access to an audience, and the audience takes them seriously, even though it's just their shaky phone and, like, overhead fluorescent lighting and not professional sound. And because of that, and because, like, these people are, like, getting agents and deals, and, like, so the paradigm has shifted, but nobody is really doing long form narrative content in that way yet. And so, like, really talented people, at least in this little, like, microcosm of one or two TikToks, are getting the responsibility of being creators by, like, studios and production companies. But then, can it act, like, does it translate for them? And so I think the opposite of bringing filmmakers to this platform with no budget, but literally everything you need in your hand, I think that that is a much better way to get the art out there and, like, have it be for the people and, like, live to see the day where people set eyes on it and not just wait for film festival circuits to be over and, like, maybe someday someone will open your email. Like, I can make a movie and I can just put it on TikTok and people can just find it. And, like, whatever happens after that is okay. Like, whatever it is or whatever it's not, but at least I know I can make it and get it out there. And I think that that's so empowering after we've been told for so long that there's this, like, laundry list of things that we need to accomplish. And, like, watch out, make sure you have a real sound guy because nobody's going to give you the time of day if your sound is off, or, you know, like, I think that this is very freeing. And so it allowed us to just, like, show up at a little at a location and, like, write a script and play and be really creative and, like, work with what we had, you know?
Oh, that's really beautiful. That's so cool. How has the response been to it?
It's online? Been really fun. It's been really fun. I can. It's fun to watch people, especially interacting with Roz's account, because at least you can tell on Caretaker Film, you can tell that you're watching a movie. And so people are getting invested in it. It's very much like a loud movie theater that's, you know, that's doing a lot of, like, callbacks. But then on Roz's account, like, people are getting invested with her as a person. And then as things start to go a little bit sideways and the dread begins to build, like, you can see people's confusion and, like, hey, what's going on with you? And it's everything that I hoped would happen, essentially.
Oh, that's awesome. What was the filming process like?
It was really great. We knew we wanted to film locally in Jersey, because Jersey is a really interesting place. Like we're both lifelong natives, and it is a weird, weird state with a really specific culture. So we knew we wanted to like fold that in, because anytime I see Jersey depicted on screen, like it just adds a little, it's like throwing in some new spices to the film. And I was pretty sure I wanted to do something down the shore even. So I was down in Cape May with my mom, and we were chewing on this idea of like, well, where are we going to go in South Jersey? Do we want to do like the Pine Barrens? Do we want to do the shore? And as my mom and I were driving along the main drag in Cape May, which lines the beach, and like you've got the ocean on one side and then like all these really beautiful Victorian B&Bs on the other, I saw this like creepy behemoth of a house that was boarded up. And not as though it had been abandoned, but like it's the off season. So they have these really big, like old timey placards, right? And I was like, who does that in 2023? Like, what year are they living in? That's so strange. It's so anachronistic. It's so creepy. And none of the other buildings, like they were all on, you know, Nest and stuff, like they were fine. Yeah. This building, I was like, wow. That these people are taking this really seriously. It's like a totally different era. And it was such an imposing and dread-inducing building. I called Jody and I was like, dude, I found it. Like, we have to figure out how to use this house. And it ends up being our exterior. I wanted to shoot it all in there, but because they had legitimately boarded up for the winter, I called the guy and I was like, hey, and he was like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like, it really is not going to be occupied until May at all. Like, we've turned off everything. And I was like, oh shoot. So we ended up finding another really incredible Victorian in Cape May that was available as an Airbnb. So super convenient, like no problem, no hoops to jump through. And while it was actually felt really beautiful and like light inside, you could feel like the creepy factor starting to jump in once it got dark. And we did shoot all in one day. Like I arranged it was great. It all turns out to be like 23 minutes all told. And we got in at like 7 a.m. one day and we left at like 9 p.m.
Wow.
And we didn't shoot in sequence, but like we did all our daylight stuff to begin with, and then all of our night stuff. And as the night's getting later and later, and like it's deep in November, so it's dark as of like 5 p.m. I was like, Jody, I'm getting the creeps. and they had giant dolls in the house.
Oh
weird. Yes. In fact, I was going to use them, but then in the paperwork that they gave me to check in, and they were so generous and lovely with me. In the paperwork, they were like, please be very respectful of these dolls. They're antiques and we care about them very much. And I was like, I suppose if I make them creepy in my movie, that's not really respecting them. So I will decline and keep myself away from the haunted dolls. And like, make a really broad boundary around that experience.
Oh my goodness. Oh, that sounds so creepy. So can you tell me the premise is of Caretaker?
Yeah. So Roz has been in doing van life for all of COVID, and she's ready to settle down and like get a job again. And she finds this listing for a caretaker of a Cape May B&B over the winter months. So basically in Jersey, that would be from like October through Memorial Day. And she's boarded for free and she's fed. And all she has to do, aside from like make sure the house doesn't burn down, is feed the woman who lives in the attic, who is the mother of the people who own the house.
Creepy.
Very creepy. And it's like, okay, you don't have to interact with her. She's very private and she never opens her door, just like leave a tray outside for her. So Roz starts this like seemingly one-way relationship with Mother Black, but it turns out to be much more cerebral and intrusive than that as time goes on.
Oh, that sounds so creepy. Would you take that job if somebody offered it to you?
Absolutely the fuck not. I've spent my entire life watching horror movies. There is no way on earth.
You should watch, have you seen Caveat?
Oh my God, Caveat has been in my queue for a really long. It looks so effective. When we were talking about dread-inducing movies, yeah, like the trailer of that is what came to mind. Is it really good?
It is really good. It's really interesting. The premise is very what the fuck. It's like, who would do this? So yeah, it's this guy gets hired to look after this young girl in this house, but there is a caveat. So,
oh my God, it's a child. Ugh.
I don't remember if it's a child or like an adult that's just very immature. I watched it like Got 2 years it. Ago.
Both so, of those are so creepy.
Yeah.
So, all but possibilities.
It's
actually,
it's really good. Yeah, it's very creepy. So, and it takes place there on like a remote island somewhere in Europe, I think.
Yes.
So it's like rainy and dark all the time.
Ugh, dreadful.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah, I've been waiting to, I've been like scraping up my bravery to watch that one.
It's not that scary, but it's it's very interesting. It's an interesting concept. So
nice.
Yeah.
Thank you for your endorsement.
Yeah, no problem. So how did you get into filmmaking?
I realized I wanted to do so much more than just the acting jobs that I got. Like, I was encouraged to, before I started screenwriting, I'm also a huge fan of like the works of Jim Henson. The Muppets are pretty much my second favorite thing in the world, if my first favorite thing is horror movies. So I started, I co-created and was producing this sort of mashup, this web series called The Weirdos Next Door, which is like a hybrid of Full House meets The Muppet Show. Yeah, nice. It was so fun. It is so fun. We're sort of in and out of hiatus as time goes by. But I started making that with my co-producers in like 2013. And I was like, oh, this feels really good. Oh, just getting to make things that I like and that matter to me. And I don't have to like nail this procedural audition or like work for enough residuals. I mean, obviously, like putting food on the table is a great benefit. But in terms of being an artist, getting to tell the stories I want to tell is exhilarating. And nobody's going to do exactly what you want to do. Like, there's only one you. And so I started doing that with a couple of friends like 10 years ago. And then a few years later, I started writing my own screenplays and wrote a handful of pilots and a few features and just like exercised all of my happy creative energy that way. And then I had a whole pile of screenplays that I believed in fervently, but like then it was either sell them or crowdfund and no thank you. So I was, that brought me pretty much right to now, because I was right before the pandemic started, I was like in LA and like pitching to production companies and to showrunners and like at Sundance in 2020, and then everything shut down. And so like coming out of it in a more pronounced way was when I met up with Jody and I was like, we just got to make something. Like, let's just do it. Let's just get it on its feet and get it shot and not have to wait on any of the stoppers that we've had for years and years and years. And both things feel really good. It feels really good to write them, and it also feels amazing to execute it. And like, you know, to go through the growing pains of like, how do I figure this out? Which with puppets was also incredibly challenging. Like, I don't think we notice exactly how brilliant Jim Henson and Frank Oz at all were in terms of what they were able to film. Like, we just buy that the Muppets are people, right? But like, as a puppeteer, watching all of the classics and like all the tricks, like Miss Piggy doing synchronized swimming in The Great Muppet Caper, like that's incredibly intricate puppetry and really good with tricks. And you could see that Henson was really just trying to like challenge himself and figure out ways to bypass all the obstacles, or like all the Muppets singing and riding bicycles. Like, so doing that with puppets for Weirdos Next Door was always super fun, and like putting a puzzle together and, you know, doing it, I think, in a lighter, definitely a lighter way for like Caretaker, you know, falling a little bit bass backwards into like things I didn't know how to do before. So I've never edited something this big. And Jody and I edited together, like me with hands on the program and Jody next to me. And so like figuring out the limitations of that. And if this doesn't work, oh, maybe I screwed this up. Should I hit undo? Oh no, I actually kind of like it the way that I screwed it up. And like, same thing with sound. So I find it to be sort of like putting a puzzle together. And if you can like that process, it's mostly fun growth with a few moments of legitimate, like pulling your hair out. Oh, fuck. One of the biggest obstacles that we encountered was we were going to drop everything like right at once over the span of maybe like, you know, 15 minutes and just click submit, submit, submit. But when we were trying it out in beta first, and thank God we did. Oh my God. Thank God. Because we wanted to do a screen recorded version for press of like, this is the walkthrough. This is how it goes. So we made a beta. And as I'm clicking like submit, 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 TikTok just was like, bloop, you're doing suspicious activity. And I was like, oh my God, Jody, thank God this didn't happen to us on the day. Yeah. Like, we could have gotten shut down right in the middle of the premiere. So we ended up very quietly dropping like 5 videos a day. Okay. And it wasn't exactly what we wanted to do, but it really wasn't bad. And it ensured that like the account would be on the up and up and we wouldn't get shut down and we wouldn't like, you know, find our way into the shadow banning elements of things, you know?
Oh, that's so fun. That sounds very fulfilling as a creative person.
So yeah,
that's awesome. I have to say, I love that you made something that you compared to Full House, because of course you can't tell, but somewhere on, I can't even point to it, on the shelf right there, I have all 6 seasons of Full House.
Oh my God.
So, yeah.
Is that your comfort viewing?
It has been. I haven't watched them in forever. So, but yeah, I could just sit down and like just watch, and it's like 6 20-minute episodes.
That's amazing. I think you might really enjoy The Weirdos Next Door. It is pure send-up energy.
I will have to check it out. Do you have any plans for a future horror movie or series?
Yeah. We've been noodling around. I think our next project is going to be it's going to tease a feature that we want to do. Not that I wouldn't make Caretaker into a feature. In a heartbeat, I absolutely would. But Jody and I wrote a feature called The Reunion over in 2021. And I love it. It is my baby. And it's more of like a 90s teen, you know, John Hughes feeling comedy. And the lead character in that, I would like to do my next TikTok film with Jody of her life and have that sort of serve as like the pre-existing IP and basically build her life out and have her interacting with people and, you know, have that serve as like the greater universe for the reunion. And then if and when someone's like, hey, is this a movie? I can be like, why, yes, it is.
Oh, that's so cool. Oh, well, yeah. I will be on the lookout for that. If you could star in a horror movie or direct a horror movie, which one would you rather do?
Oh, direct.
Yeah.
I would direct, which is not to say, well, I guess it's not to say I'd be super good at it. Like, I hope I would. But I say it only because I would want to watch it so badly that, like, I want to be in Video Village. I want to be watching every shot and, like, let my gut lead me in, like, okay, no, we need a little more of this, a little less of that. And as much as, frankly, I do stand for, like, cast more goofy, bubbly people in horror movies, especially women. I think my presence there is probably quite necessary in like blowing out the walls of castability tropes. But frankly, it's my favorite thing on earth to watch. And so just to imagine myself like on set in Video Village for a solid month, watching every single take at the monitor, that, yeah, I think that would be the most fulfilling, which is a crazy thing to say.
Oh, that's awesome. So an article came out in 2020 that said that horror movie fans were handling lockdown better than non-horror movie fans. Why do you think that was the case?
Oh my God. We are constantly preparing for crisis. I really think that's it. I do. And I watched horror movies every single day of 2020. I shit you not. At least one, usually two.
Oh, wow.
It was great.
Did you watch really any great pandemic horror during the pandemic?
I watched a Host. Okay. Right? Is Host, yeah, the one that was basically, yep, on Zoom? That was very good. Yes. Another great possession movie. I watched Host, and I feel like there was something else about a virus.
Contagion?
But I didn't watch Contagion. No, I still have to see Contagion.
Oh, yeah, you do.
I probably watched Wreck again during, yep, I am almost certain I did. And not really in the horror landscape, but what I watched over and over, and I had already seen it the first time. Have you seen Last Man on Earth? It's a series. Oh my God. I couldn't be more obsessed with anything, really. It was ahead of its time. It was made in 2015. By Phil Lord and Chris Miller, the guys behind the Lego movie, but it's the baby of Will Forte. Like, he wrote it and dreamed, oh, wow, it all up. And, you know, at some point was like, this is my passion project. And they were like, holy shit. And even though it was shot in like 2015, it takes place in 2020 after a worldwide pandemic, but like, basically the one that happens in The Stand.
Oh my, like, God.
So it's leveled the whole world, and he thinks, wow, he's the only person left on the planet. And it's very funny. It's incredibly well written. Will Forte is amazing. Kristen Schaal also stars in it. She's epic. And that's kind of how I coped. Like, because I couldn't watch regular TV and only horror movies felt good because I was like, I can't put Friends on. I couldn't even watch The Office. I was like, no, that, like, everything is on fire. I need to watch everything being on fire to feel like the inside matches outside. And Last Man on Earth was so incredible, even though, thank God, you know, not everyone on Earth died. Like, it was still, it like spoke to me, and I watched it over and over, just like ad infinitum. And I still watch it to this day. Like, it's so good. It's so good. So that plus, yeah, yes. What else did you see that was like pandemic heavy?
I watched The Crazies. I watched Contagion, Outbreak, 28 Days Later. So yes. Host, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Outbreak. Yes. I love Outbreak. Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember seeing Contagion in the theaters, and my friend turned to me after and he was like, I'm going to go wash my hands. Little did we know.
No idea.
Later, yeah.
None.
Yeah. Yeah. They reference social distancing and stuff like that in Contagion. Whoa. So it's like very, I'm like, oh, I get that now. I know what they mean.
Wow. Yeah. We would have had no idea then.
Yeah. No idea.
They would have had to study like the WHO guidelines that nobody paid attention to until March 2020.
Yeah.
Crazy.
And I just finished the first season of The Last of Us. Have you watched that?
I watched the first episode thus far, but I'm excited to go all the way through.
Yeah.
And Station 11.
I watched a couple episodes. I didn't get through it all.
I like the ones that live in the moment of crisis, though. So I do admittedly sort of get a little disappointed when only the first episode is about the bad thing, and then the rest of the time is like about how you've coped after the bad thing. And I'm like, what a cop out.
Yeah. Maybe that's why I didn't like it. Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, right. I mean, I did think it was very cool. Like, wow, a world 20 years in the future that's like returned to the land, and oh my god, this is what actors are doing, so this is what I should keep in the back of my mind. But like, yeah, I would really, really, really love if they took more of a Walking Dead approach to things, and it was like, no, we're constantly putting out the fire that is this disaster.
Yeah, and with The Last of Us, it's so, I feel like it's such a much more invasive virus than The Walking Dead because mushrooms are spores, so they're in the air.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Do you still get good shroom zombie action throughout the rest of the...
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
So, I was like, oh no, are we just moving to like the bureaucracy of like...
No, it is. There is a lot of that, but there is a lot of mushroom zombie heads. So
nice. Okay, great. That's good to know.
Yeah. So what is a horror movie that you would consider an underseen or underrated gem?
Ooh. Oh no, I have so many. Oh, The Taking of Deborah Logan.
Yeah.
Yes. So good. What a great premise. So creepily done. Really eerie. Another fabulous like found footage situation. I love the taking of Deborah Logan. Also in terms of horror comedies, the Leslie Vernon story.
Yeah. Oh,
Behind the Mask.
Yeah.
Behind the Mask is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
Just brilliant. And like, I know that it got some good flowers when it was first released and it holds up so well. Yeah. Those are a couple that like strike me immediately as perennial favorites for me. What about you?
I really like the movie Triangle, which isn't often talked about, and Cry Wolf, which is a slasher from 2006, maybe.
Ooh.
So
I have not seen either of those.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think the reviews were very good. I don't know if Triangle was ever released in a theater, but I just saw it was either on Shudder or Amazon. So, and it's a really interesting premise. It's like a movie that kind of folds in on itself. So it's they end up in like a Bermuda Triangle type of thing. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I've definitely seen it suggested to me before.
Yeah, it's good. It's worth at least one watch. So.
Nice.
Yeah. Are there any horror movies that you won't watch at all or that you won't watch ever again?
I really think Skinamarink has to be there just because I'm so dreading it. I don't think. I shocked myself by agreeing to watch Hereditary again. I shocked myself because I wasn't going to. And then my partner's nephew, who's 20, was staying with us. And he loves horror movies. And he was like, oh my God, you have Shudder. Oh my God, please, can I watch Hereditary, please? And I was like, I don't think you know what you're getting into. And he's like, no, I have to watch it. And I was like, oh, okay, if you insist on watching it, I guess I have to be here because it's really disturbing. And so I like sat and just kind of creeped my shoulders up. And I think I might have put headphones in once it starts getting really fucking scary. Once like Toni Collette, you know, is like in front of the fireplace and like all of that, I could not.
Ooh.
But I don't think I would watch Hereditary again. I don't think I'll ever watch Skinamarink. It takes a lot for me to like reapproach American versions of K-horror. So like I don't think I would watch The Ring again, even though it is so good. Also, I never want to watch The Grudge again. The Grudge scared the shit out of me. I watched it once in 2004 in the theater and I got so fucking scared. So I don't think I could do that one again. And Paranormal Activity.
Okay, cool.
Everything else is pretty much fair game. And I do a lot of rewatching because I have like comfort horror too.
What are your comfort horror movies?
Comfort horror includes the House of the Devil. I do find that one to be like very soothing. Always includes like schlocky stuff. So I'm forever a Troll 2 stan. That is easily comfort horror for me. I just saw Spookies for the first time thanks to Joe Bob Briggs.
I've never even heard of that.
Spookies is total insanity. It basically started as a fully produced movie of another name. And then I think the two filmmakers of that had a falling out. And so it was like reassigned to some other third party. And the third party wrote a totally different script and filmed completely different stuff. But then all of it got mashed together to make one totally nonsense plot. It's absolutely bonkers.
Oh my God.
I find the whole poltergeist situation period to be comfort watching as well. And I guess I would even put it in there, specifically the 90s miniseries, because I grew up with it. I mean, there's a lot. There's a lot of comfort horror. Do you have comfort horror?
I have to say, like, Paranormal Activity, those movies are like comfort horror watches to me. So.
Yes. Yes.
What else do I just put on if I, I don't know, maybe even Hereditary. I'll rewatch that whenever. I rewatched it for the first time like on my birthday during lockdown. And I was like, oh, I love this. And then my partner at the time was like, I hate this. I feel terrible. I was like,
forecasting.
Yeah.
Also, Stranger Things.
Yeah.
Stranger Things. Oh my God. Oh, I love. I could not get enough of it. Like it's such an addiction that I only can stay away from it when I've been like clean for 30 days or whatever. But the second that I start to watch it again, it just has this centrifugal pull and I just want to like go over and over constantly.
Oh, that's awesome. Have you ever had a noteworthy experience seeing a horror movie in theaters?
Dude, I saw Blair Witch theaters.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I saw Blair Witch like on Halloween or for my best friend's birthday. And I think I was 13 or 14 when it came out. And it was absolutely terrifying. Being in that theater was such a visceral memory for me. And like, hearing the way that everybody responded, the screams. I mean, it was like when Paranormal Activity decided to put cameras in the theaters and like, you know, grab that experience. And we were new. to fake documentaries.
Yeah.
So there was real concern, especially among kids. Like, kids don't know. We had no idea. It was, yeah, that was a really crazy experience. I don't think I rewatched it again for a while because it was so scary. And then I gave it another try, maybe in college. And I was like, oh yeah, this holds up. This is effective.
Awesome. What has your favorite horror movie been so far in 2023 that you've seen?
Ooh, that's a very good question. I mean, I saw 65, which doesn't count. 65, I really enjoyed it.
I really want to see it. I heard nothing but bad things, but I love Adam Driver and dinosaurs.
It's so crazy because Adam Driver is spectacular in it. I mean, of course he is, but like, you never really see people, you never see, especially male actors, reacting to the gravity of horrible things the way that like a human should. And he actually does. So like, he breaks down in a very like raw and human way. And I'm like, thank you for freeing men from this paradigm. Like, you are setting the tone. I really liked 65. I'm very excited to see Evil Dead Rising.
Yes.
I'm very excited to see Malum.
That's how it's pronounced. Malum. Yeah.
I loved The Last Shift.
Yeah, it's different enough. Yeah, you reached out to me on Twitter about this. I really enjoyed it. It's different enough where it doesn't feel just like the same movie being made over and over again. And you can tell that they had a bigger budget. There's more gore. But it's different. I like the ending is different. The story is more detailed, and you get to see more of like the cult. So I thought it was worth seeing.
Nice.
Yeah,
that looked really effectively scary. So there's stuff coming up that I'm really excited about. I have to tell you, a really weird movie came up in Shudder that I remembered from the box art, and it was one of the scary box art ones. So like, I was too afraid to pick it out when I was a little kid as a VHS. But it's called In the Company of Wolves. And it's so fucking good. It's a little bit Henson-esque, like a little bit labyrinth-y, and a little bit like fairy tale. So it's got like hints of legend to it, and hints of labyrinth, and then hints of like an American Werewolf in London. But it's from the 80s, and it's this like very misty, woodsy fairy tale where Angela Lansbury stars as the grandmother like taking her granddaughter through puberty. And it's, you know, this broader allegory on like sexuality, and and it's all about like werewolves and what to watch out for. And it's so good. I thought it was going to be either schlocky or schlocky and not enjoyable, but it was fabulous and also super nostalgic because I was like, oh, this feels really familiar. And like, it's shot in England, and yeah, it's really delightful.
Oh, interesting. What was it called?
In the Company of Wolves.
Okay. Well, I'll have to look it up. Going back to Adam Driver for a second, it's not horror, but on Amazon Prime, I think it is. Go check out Annette if you want to see him in a musical.
I do. Yes, I do.
And watch it with people. Like, experience it like with other people.
Ooh, thank you. Oh my God. I haven't even heard of that. That sounds like an exciting find.
That's one word for it.
Got it.
So on the flip side, what horror movie are you most looking forward to seeing in the rest of 2023?
The Beau one.
Beau is Afraid.
Yes, at some point I will be bold enough to see that. And I am excited to see Evil Dead Rising. But yeah, I'm really curious about Beau is Afraid. What else should be on my radar?
Renfield, The Pope's Exorcist. The new Insidious movie is coming out.
Oh no, really?
Yeah. But Patrick Wilson is directing this one. So
that's exciting. Yeah. I don't say that as if it's bad. They're so good and they're so scary and they're so effective. Like another movie that I really can't bear to watch again. That whole suite of them. Like when the Nun trailer came out, I was like, no, hard pass. Absolutely not. I already have to watch that creepy ghost in like The Conjuring and then The Conjuring 2 and like no. And I felt exactly the same way on like the B plot of Insidious, which is so scary.
Yeah, Insidious is a great movie.
So good and so terrifying. Do you know what this one is supposed to be about?
The next installment in the franchise, which will depict the formerly possessed Dalton Lambert, who now heads off to college. So the kid fuck. From the first one.
Got it.
That I'm really looking forward to that. They're also making a direct sequel to The Exorcist.
Whoa.
And Saw 10.
Wow.
So lots of good stuff coming out.
Wow. Yeah. Good year for us.
Yeah, again, we've had such good years lately. So, it's been a good horror renaissance. It has been. Are there any horror movies that you love that people generally don't like?
Oh, so many. I am always down for schlocky B stuff. Like The Stuff, like Troll 2, like Motel Hell, like Chopping Mall. I mean, I have carved out a forever landmark in my heart for all of the horror movies that probably never should have been made. I love all of them. And in terms of like things that have been panned that aren't B, yeah, I guess the only thing that really comes to mind is The Veil, because clearly it has like 2 stars on IMDb and I really earnestly liked it quite a lot. I think, yeah, I'm trying to think about any ones that aren't B that like just are usually loathed entirely. And I don't think I have any of those on my list. What about you?
Scream 3 and the 2019 remake of Black Christmas. I love both those.
Good selection. <So. laughs> Scream 3. Oh, yes.
If you could remake one horror movie, which one would it be?
Ooh. That's a great question. Damn. What'd I remake? Okay. I might make... Oh, I know what I would do. I mean, in all earnesty. Have you seen the anthology horror movie Holidays?
I have not, no.
It's very enjoyable. With one fucking outstanding one. And it's so creepy and so atmospheric and vexing and puzzling and very underexplained, all in the most amazing ways. And it's for Father's Day. I really can't recommend it enough.
Oh, what's it called?
The anthology film is called Holidays, and it's definitely on Prime in under some umbrella right now.
Okay.
But the Father's Day one, I mean, there are many that are really delightful. The Father's Day one is so fucking amazing. It's so good. And I would want to make that into a feature.
Oh, that's a really good answer. I'll have to go check that out.
It's so good. Oh, you have to tell me when you watch it.
I don't think there are any Mother's Day horror movies either. That's probably...
Except... from the Bee Kingdom, literal Mother's Day, which was made in 1979, and it's horrible. It's, you know, it's hillbilly murder central, right? And it's this old woman who has two adult, like, Cro-Magnon sons, and she has them do her bidding, and it's very, you know, Hills Have Eyes, essentially. That's a Mother's Day movie.
I will never watch that, probably. You should meet my friend Jody, because he loves 80s horror, too. And, like, the cheesier, yeah, the better. So
I do. I really, really love it. And that's, like, how I spent my entire adolescence. Mm. Plus being earnestly terrified by, like, real horror, but also knowing that I could easily watch a ton of B horror movies and be totally okay, and also just be laughing my ass off the whole time. And that never left me.
So my last question is, if you had to spend quarantine with one horror villain, who would it be?
It would be, oh, is this who I want to, like, is this the one whose brain I want to pick? Or is this the one I want to terrorize me?
Either one.
Probably Freddy Krueger. Mm-hmm.
You don't want to sleep?
I know, right? probably Freddy Krueger, although my first answer was going to be Pennywise. But, like, I would, I mean, for both of them, when I was a kid, they both haunted my dreams, you know, in, like, tag team form. And the way I would, like, get around it in my dream is that I would, like, combine forces with them. I would, like, join them as, like, a hired hand. Even though I wouldn't end up doing anything terrible to people, I would, like, negotiate my way into being their lackey so that they wouldn't, you know, murder me in my sleep, or, you know, eat me out of a storm drain.
Oh my God, that's so funny. I love it.
But those are definitely my two favorite, like, monsters, for sure.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, thank you so much for being here and chatting with me. Do you want to tell everyone where they can find you as well as Caretaker on the internet?
Sure. I am on the internet. I'm not officially on TikTok, really, but I am on Instagram at Jen Ponton. If you want to see my broader work, that's jenponton.com. And if you want to find Caretaker, that's on TikTok at Caretaker Film. And then Roz's account is at Kate May Caretaker.
Awesome. Well, everyone, go check it out on TikTok. And thank you so much again. I will see you around the internet.
Amazing. Thanks so much, Allison.
That's it for this week's episode of Who's There. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Jen Ponton, and thanks again to Jen for coming on. I'll leave links to in the show notes to her website and where you can find The Caretaker on TikTok, and you should definitely go watch it. You can follow us on Twitter at Who's There Pod, or on Instagram at Who's There Podcast. And if you have any questions, comments, concerns, horror movie recommendations, or you'd like to be a guest, shoot us an email at whosterepc@gmail.com. Until next time, stay scary and never ask who's there.